So like I said, this is pure lecture today. Usually you're going to be doing some activity, and my lab lecture will usually be just a couple minutes. Today it's many more than a couple minutes. But just like, regardless of how long it is, just like a lecture upstairs, when I'm addressing the entire class, it's a good idea to be taking notes. I want to talk about some scientific fundamentals. And this document that I'm displaying here, you'll have access to this as well on the site. It'll be the same place where you'll find the recordings, which I'll talk about later. But you can see that we're starting with a treatment of quantities in units. And so we should define those, first of all. Who wants to define either one of those, or say what the difference between them is? That's how much is not always what a quantity is. I'm going to put it this way. A quantity is anything that you can measure. And obviously there's a hell of a lot of things that you can measure. So there's really no limit to the number of quantities. But let's just bring up some examples. What is a quantity? It's an example quantity. Did everyone hear that? See, I can't hear either one of you. I have this fan right above me. So yell out. What did you say? That's not a quantity. That is an activity. All right? A quantity is something that you actually measure about something. Go ahead. Volume is a good example of a quantity. You can measure volume, right? What's another example? Pressure. And so on. Well, how is that different from units? What are units?
Units are what we use to measure those.
That's right. Units are standardized sizes that we use to measure quantities. So any given quantity, and there's all kinds of quantities, has a choice of different units you could use to measure that quantity in. For instance, We said volume as an example quantity. What are some example units that we could use for if we're trying to measure volume? Milliliters. Now, milliliters is in the SANE system, the metric system, which almost the entire world uses. Embarrassingly, the United States is one of only three countries that refuses to use the SANE system. We still use the silly system. And so milliliters is not part of that. What are some silly system units for volume? Gallons, cups, teaspoons, acre feet. There's all kinds of choices for volume. Okay, but that's a unit, right? You measure a quantity in certain units. Everyone have a good feel for the difference between those two? All right. Well, then let me say that each of these two, quantities and units, can be broken into two categories. In other words, there's two categories of quantities and there's two categories of units. And those two categories are fundamental and derived. So there are fundamental quantities, derived quantities. And correspondingly, there are fundamental units and derived units. So what is the difference? Well, a fundamental quantity is a quantity that stands on its own. It is its own thing. It is not made up of other quantities. A derived quantity, on the other hand, is made up of other quantities. At least two quantities, maybe more. And when I say two, I don't necessarily mean two different quantities. It can be two of the same quantity combined into another quantity. Well, that other quantity, since it's made up of at least two quantities, would be derived. Depending on how good a feel you have for chemistry, a good analogy with this is with atoms and molecules. Atoms, atoms make up elements. There's millions of substances, and we're creating new ones all the time. But there are only roughly 100 substances that are elements. Those are fundamental. A single atom isn't made up of other atoms, right? A molecule, on the other hand, is made up of two or more atoms. And so those would be like derived quantities. And notice you can have a compound, which is made up of two or more different atoms, like water, hydrogen and oxygen. That's obviously would be derived. But you also have oxygen molecules, which are made up of only oxygen atoms, but there's two atoms of oxygen in each molecule. So that's still derived. All right? Go ahead.
So just to clarify real fast, sulfur, one of them would be fundamental. But if it was like iodine, for example, because iodine is dissolved in tubes, then it would become derived.
Well, that's why don't use the name of the substance, use either atom or a molecule. If it's you're talking about a sulfur atom, yes, that would be fundamental. An oxygen molecule or any molecule, no matter whether it's made up of different kinds of atoms or just multiple of the same kind of atom, would be derived. Similarly for quantities. So notice, once again, using the example volume that we've already covered, that's what kind of quantity in based on my definition. Is it fundamental or derived? Volume. Is volume fundamental or derived? Well, think about how volume is measured. What is volume, by the way, first of all? Well, no. Liquids are substances. You can measure the volume of liquids, but you can measure the volume of other things as well.
Is it the space that takes up?
Exactly. The space occupied by some sample is its volume. All right. Well, how do you measure that? How do you calculate that mathematically? Let's just take the simple. You could measure the volume of anything that's three-dimensional, but just take the simple example of a cube.
You measure its size.
Well, what do you mean by the size? How do you calculate a cube's volume? Okay, height, width, and depth, three different words, obviously, but they're really just different names for the same thing, which is distance. So it's distance times distance times distance. It's all the same quantity, but there's three of them in there for volume, right? So it's derived. Distance by itself, though, is fundamental. It's not based on anything else. Does that help? Well, as I said, there's no limit to the number of fundamental quantities. But it might surprise you how few of those quantities are fundamental. There's only a handful. I mean, you could count them on your hands, how many fundamental quantities there are in the universe. Almost all quantities are derived. They're just made up of these fundamental quantities in some combination. Okay, that's the definition for quantities. But any given unit is also either fundamental or derived. You just have to think about what quantities they correspond to. If a quantity is fundamental, then any choice of units for that quantity will be fundamental units. And correspondingly, for any quantity that's derived, any units you choose to use, if they're valid units for that quantity, will be derived units. Okay? Let's look at this next page that gives you some important quantities. By important, I mean likely to be important in biology. There's all kinds of other important quantities, but these ones come up all the time. Time. Do you recognize that as a quantity, first of all? Something you can measure, right? How do you categorize it? Well, that's the units you use it in. But when I say how do you categorize, I mean, is it fundamental or derived?
Derived.
If it's derived, that means it's made out of other things. What is time made out of? Those are units, not quantities.
Time
is fundamental. It's not made out of other things. All right, so it stands on its own. It's one of the very few fundamental quantities. Now, there's all kinds of choices of units for any given quantity, but and there's throughout history there have been many different systems of measurement. The only two really that I'm talking about today are the metric system and the silly system, since they're still in wide use. Well, time is a little bit of an exception, because the metric system, the reason it is so sane, the reason that you can learn it in a few minutes rather than spend a lifetime trying to learn the other system and never really know it, is that it's a decimal system. It's based on powers of 10, which are easy to work with mathematically, except for time. Time is the only quantity where we use the same units in the silly system and the metric system, which are based on 60, not 10. So seconds, hours, and minutes and hours are also metric units. They're silly system units and metric units. What about mass? Let's first consider what it is. What is mass?
Size.
Size is an ambiguous term, but no, it's not weight, but I'm glad you said that, because someone always says weight, and it reminds me to tell you the difference between the two, which is important to know, especially because even people who should know better confuse these two all the time. But mass and weight are not the same thing.
Isn't weight like gravity pulling on you?
It's the force due to gravity pulling on an object that has mass. Mass is the amount of material, the amount of matter that it makes up an object. All right? Weight, on the other hand, is one example of a force. There's all kinds of forces in the universe, but weight is not only force, it's specifically force due to gravity. And this is why people confuse it all the time, because the more massive something is, the more mass it contains, the greater the force due to gravity. if it's in a gravitational field. So weight depends on mass, but weight is not mass. All right, now, for instance, if you go into space, before you go into space, you have a certain amount of material you're made out of. That's your mass, right? Well, that doesn't change when you go out into space. You still have the same mass, but you're suddenly weightless. And that's because when you're not being pulled by gravity, you don't have that force. You're not experiencing that force. So your weight goes to zero, but your mass stays the same. Right? Now, that's what mass is. What about units? Well, what is the metric unit of mass?
Grams.
Correctly. Correct. And what about the silly system that you've learned for two decades? No, those are units of force. They're weight, so they're force, not mass. Ounces is also weight. This is the silliness. You don't even know what the units of mass are. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What's the question again?
What are the silly system unit? What is the silly system unit?
Oh, the U.S. uses?
Yes.
Oh, isn't it the cups and tablespoons?
That's volume.
Oh, my bad.
That's fine. What's that? Right, that's pressure. Yes, the silly system unit of mass is the slug, which you probably haven't even heard of, right? So you're still learning this system, and it's why we should abandon it. Speaking of abandoning it, I remember being in fifth grade, and the teacher saying, "We're going to learn the metric system today, and you need to pay attention because pretty soon that's all we'll be using." Well, that was 48 years ago, and we're no closer at all today in abandoning it. But anyway, the slug is the unit of mass for the silly system. It's the gram for the metric system. What about categorizing it as either fundamental or derived mass? Yeah. What is it made up of then? Well, those are objects, though. What are the quantity? For it to be a derived quantity, it has to be made up of other quantities. So mass is actually fundamental also. I told you that there's only a handful, and that's true, but several of these are that handful, are in that handful. Length, fundamental or derived?
Fundamental.
It is also fundamental, yes. So it's against the odds having so many fundamental ones in a row, but fundamental ones are also commonly measured. I mean, that's why they're fundamental, for one thing. But length goes by many names, as we were talking about when we discussed volume, right? Width, height, length, depth, those are all just other words for length, for distance or length. All kinds of choices for that as well. And what about the silly system? Miles, inches, rods, feet, yards. In the metric system? The meter. Correct. Volume, we've already discussed. What did we say that is? Fundamental or derived? Derived, because it's made up of multiple lengths, right? Well, what about units? Silly system units, we mentioned some. Well, actually, we mentioned both. Liters for metric. Cups and teaspoons and everything else for fluid ounces, by the way. That's another confusing thing. Ounces are weight units. fluid ounces are volume units. A fluid ounce gets its name because it is the volume necessary to contain exactly enough water that weighs an ounce. Now, if it's some other thing that you're measuring the volume of, it might weigh more than an ounce, right? A fluid ounce of mercury is going to be much heavier than an ounce. And a fluid ounce of shaving cream will be much less heavy than an ounce. But if you use water, pure water, one fluid ounce, which is the volume, is exactly has an exact weight of 1 ounce. But that's the difference. All right? The metric system, do you have a good feel for how big a liter is? From drinks, probably, right? Or drinking bottles. What about a milliliter? How big is a milliliter? A milliliter can also be called, because it's exactly equal to it, a cubic centimeter. So a centimeter is about that big, right? If you consider a perfect cube that's that big by that big by that big, that's 1 milliliter. And if you take 1,000 of those, that's a liter. All right, temperature. Well, just like mass and weight always get confused, or often get confused, so do temperature and heat. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Force is what? Fundamental or derived? Okay, why? Force does not equal pressure. Pressure is force per area. You think it's fundamental? What did Newton have to tell us about force? What did he say it equals? Right. F equals ma, he's famous for. Well, this equation just by itself should tell you that force is derived, right? Because it's made up of mass and acceleration. In fact, just acceleration by itself is already derived, because acceleration is distance per time. It's made up of 3 quantities just by itself. And pressure is force per area, so it's made up of 5 quantities. Well, what about the metric unit for force? In his honor, we call the metric unit of force the Newton. What about the silly system? Pounds, right. Pounds, ounces, those are all forces, right? Because they're all weights. So, I mean, those are units of force. This brings me to something that kind of pisses me off about this whole sticking to the silly system. Well, not only that, it's that's not actually what pisses me off. Anyway, if you have a bathroom scale that's made for Americans, then it usually has 2 scales on it, right? The top scale with the bigger numbers, what are those units? Pounds, which is what it should be. Because when you step on a bathroom scale, what are you measuring? Weight, which is a force, and therefore the units should be force units, which pounds are. All right? Smaller number below that is what units on a bathroom scale, on American scale? What is it? Kilograms, which is what pisses me off. Kilograms are units of what? mass, not force. So kilograms are not the metric equivalent of pounds. They can't be, because pounds are units of force and kilograms are units of mass. Those are not equivalent. If you want to have equivalent, what should be on the lower scale, on the American scales, is the metric unit of force, which is what? The newtons, as I just said. So if you want to report your weight in metric units, you say your however many newtons, not grams. When you say that you're so many grams or kilograms, you're giving your mass, not your weight. Right? You take that American scale to the moon. This is going to be a thought exercise. It's too expensive to actually do it. But if you take it to the moon, it's going to tell you you're so many kilograms, but it's going to be wrong, because your weight is only about 1/6 on the moon, and therefore it's going to tell you you're only 1/6 of the kilograms that you are, even though you're as many kilograms on the moon as you are on Earth, because that's your mass. All right, so don't confuse the two if you can help it, even though they get confused all the time. Now we can go to temperature. And I said that's confusable with heat. They are related, just like mass and weight are related. Temperature and heat are related, but they are importantly different. Heat is the energy of motion of particles. And it's an example of an extensive property that are called that because the extent, meaning how much you have, matters. In other words, more particles you have, the more heat you have, because heat is the energy of the motion of those particles. Temperature, on the other hand, is an intensive property. The intensity matters, not the amount of stuff. So just for another thought experiment, if you imagine a swimming pool, which is a pretty big sample of water, there's a hell of a lot of particles in there, right? So it has a lot of heat in it. You can take the temperature of it, but the temperature is an indication of the average speed of the particles. And think about how you compute an average. You take individual measurements and then divide by how many measurements there are, right? In other words, you take out of the equation how much there actually is. It doesn't matter how much there is for an average. So you can take the temperature of that swimming pool, it'll be whatever. You can then take a spoonful of water from that pool, and if you measure its temperature immediately, it will be the same temperature as the pool you just got it out of, right? But the heat will be drastically different. There's a hell of a lot more heat in the pool than there is in that spoonful of water of the same temperature, because there's a hell of a lot more water molecules in the pool. All right, that's the difference. There have been all kinds of different temperature scales devised over the ages. Nowadays, there's mainly three that are still in use by a lot of people, at least. What are those? What do we use in the Silly system? Yeah, the Fahrenheit scale. Whoops. Aimed after a dead human. And what about the metric system? Celsius, which used to be called centigrade, which is actually a better word, because centigrade means 100 divisions, 100 gradations. And that's because the Celsius scale is based on water. You can base it on anything, but water is a kind of a universal thing. So they based it on water. They just arbitrarily set zero to be the temperature of the freezing point of water under normal conditions on Earth. And they arbitrarily set 100, this is why it's centigrade, there's 100 steps between that, as the boiling point of water under normal pressure. All right? Well, what do we call these steps? What are the units themselves in Celsius? Well, close. They're not degrees. They're degrees Celsius. You never write just degree, the degree symbol, because Fahrenheit also uses degrees, but they're not the same degrees. So Fahrenheit uses degrees Fahrenheit, Celsius uses degrees Celsius, and the reason that they're not the same is that there's not the same number of steps between these two points having to do with water. What is the freezing point of water for Fahrenheit? 32. And boiling? This is your system. 212. So notice there's 180 steps between 32 and 212, whereas there's only 100 steps between 0 and 100. This, by the way, is why, if you've ever learned conversions between Celsius and Fahrenheit, they involve 1.8, because 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. What's the third still in use temperature scale? Joules, did you say?
Yeah.
Joules is a unit of energy, not temperature.
Is
the Kelvin scale, yes. Which can also be called the absolute temperature scale. But Kelvin is the eponymous word named after another dead human. The reason that it's appropriate to call Kelvin the absolute temperature scale is because it's not arbitrarily based on something with respect to where they put the zero. There is a zero in the Kelvin scale, but it's a meaningful zero. It's not just arbitrarily set. Zero for Kelvin is absolute zero, the coldest you can get. Now, what does that mean, though, based on what I said temperature is?
No
movement at all. That's why you can't get below that, because it doesn't make sense to talk about negative movement, right? That would still be movement, just in the other direction. So, whereas these other scales have temperatures below zero, since the zero was set for other reasons, the absolute scale has zero at the absolute bottom. But both Celsius and the Kelvin scale are considered metric scales. And they both have identically sized units, meaning that a unit on the Kelvin scale is exactly the same size as 1 degree centigrade or Celsius. What do we call those units, though, in the Kelvin scale? Kelvins. They are Kelvins. They are not degrees Kelvin. So don't use the degree symbol. You can write out Kelvins or you can use capital K. How do they match up? What is absolute zero in the centigrade scale? Anyone know, have this memorized? It's negative 273.15 degrees centigrade. Cold as hell. And I don't have the Fahrenheit one memorized, but it's negative even more because of the way the scales match up. Which means water freezes on the absolute scale at 273.15 kelvins. Okay, now, number of particles is next on this list. This is another one that's actually fundamental. So I didn't hit all of the fundamental ones, but there aren't that all that many more. Number of particles, though, is fundamental. It's not based on anything else. It's simply counting something, right? And you can count anything that's particulate. You can count planets, houses, whatever. You also have, just like the other quantities, a choice of units. Like dozen is an example of a unit for number of particles, right? What does dozen mean, by the way? Yes, and that's all it means. If I tell you I'm going to give you a dozen, you have no idea what I'm going to give you, right? Similarly, if I tell you I'm going to give you a mole, that's just a number as well. It's a unit, though, for number of particles. The mole is a pretty big number, known as Avogadro's number. Another dead human. What is the value of that? 6.022 to three places times 10 to the 23rd power. Which, if I were to write that in standard notation, I'd have to write a lot of zeros, right? It's a big number, though. Much bigger than 12. Why would we even have such a big number? Well, I mean, you could count anything in dozens, including the number of grains of sand on a beach. But the answer is going to be a big number then, right? If you use such small units. If you count things that are really, really small and there therefore are a lot of them, it's more convenient to use units that are big numbers so your answers aren't unwieldy. And so moles, the mole, which is 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd, is convenient to use if the things you're counting are so unimaginably tiny that it takes a hell of a lot of them before the collection even becomes barely visible. I'm talking about atoms and molecules. Those are counted in moles because they are so tiny that until you have moles of them, you don't even know that they're there. All right. But it's not just a randomly chosen number. It's based on real atoms. And there's a relationship between the red number on this version of the periodic table and Avogadro's number. The red number below each symbol on the periodic table is the atomic mass. You can think of that as having either of two units. Atomic mass units, which that's the number of units that one atom of that type has in it as mass. Or you can think of each of these red numbers as being the number of grams per mole of that type of atom. In other words, if you carefully counted Avogadro's number of calcium atoms, had exactly that number, and then measured the mass, it would be 40.078 grams. Does that make sense? All right. Well, let me just ask again whether you have a good feel between not only the difference between quantities and units, but also between fundamental and derived. If not, tell me. Because every time I ask this question, people say yes, and then the quizzes tell me differently. So if you don't actually have a good feel, let me know. Go ahead. Either one, you can fight it out.
So heat is fundamental while temperature is constant, right?
That's right. Heat, though, is not itself, it's also derived. Energy is derived. So they both are, yes.
So it's not fundamental, it's rough.
For temperature and heat. What were you going to ask? Oh, okay. Let's then go to the metric system. As I said before, the metric system is based on powers of 10, which is why it is so easily learned. And by the way, even though there are three countries that don't use it in everyday life, it's universally used, even in the United States, by scientists. But it's based on powers of 10, and the units that you use depend on what quantity you're measuring, obviously, right? If you're measuring mass, for instance, you have to use a mass unit. None of those units is listed here on this table. That's just going to depend on what you're measuring. What we have listed here, though, are prefaces, or prefixes, that the metric system uses before the name of the unit. So whatever unit you choose, which depends on what quantity you're using, there are many different sizes of that unit depending on which prefix you use. And therefore, you can choose the most convenient one for the size of the thing you're measuring. Notice, though, in the middle of the table, there is no prefix. This is the so-called base. So if you were measuring time, for instance, that would be seconds. The base unit would be seconds. If you're measuring weight, it would be Newton, and so on. But the base isn't multiplied by anything, or it's multiplied by 1, which doesn't change its value. That's why it has 10 to the 0 listed here. 10 to the 0 equals 1, right? Any non-zero number raised to the 0 power is equal to 1. So 10 to the 0 is 1. The base is not multiplied or divided, in other words. But notice that if you go up one step from the base, then you're talking about a multiplication by 10 to the third power. That's known in science as three orders of magnitude in difference. An order of magnitude is a power of 10. So if you say that something is two orders of magnitude bigger, that means it's 100 times as big, because 10 to the second power is 100. All right? Well, each of these steps is three orders of magnitude bigger when you go up. All right? And each one below it is three orders of magnitude smaller. But let's look at this first step above the base. That uses the kilo prefix. Kilo corresponds to 10 to the third. It is symbolized as K. But kilo by itself should never be used, right? Kilo by itself doesn't mean anything, is not a unit. It is just a prefix. The unit depends on the name of the unit. So you attach kilo to whatever unit you're using, and that makes it 1,000 times as big as the base unit. If you're measuring mass, the base unit is grams. A kilogram, therefore, is going to be 1,000 grams big. It's one unit, but it's 1,000 times as big as a gram unit is. Does that make sense? Well, if you go up another step, then you're in 10 to the 6, which is a million. That's a mega whatever, megagram, megameter, depending on the unit. Notice that a megagram is 1,000 times as big as a kilogram, but it's a million times as big as a gram. So all of these prefixes are based on the relationship between it and the base, not between any of the other rows. Mega means a million times the base. Kilo means 1,000 times the base. If you look at all these ones that are above the base, there's only one exception. They all otherwise have a capital letter as the initial and as the symbol by itself. And that's not by accident. That's to remind us that those are making the unit bigger than the base. So to be consistent, kilo should be capital K as well. Why was it not? Because capital K is already spoken for. It's the Kelvin. Right? You can't have the same symbol meaning two different things in science. That's the only reason. All the ones that are smaller than the base have lowercase initials and symbols. Starting with milli, which is 10 to the negative third, right? Well, 10 to the negative third really just means 1 over 10 to the third, which is 1 over 1,000. So it's 1,000th of. It's smaller than the base. It takes 1,000 of those to make up one base unit. A milligram, in other words, is only 1/1,000th of a gram, which is another way of saying it takes 1,000 milligrams to make up 1 gram. And 1,000th of that, which is 1,000,000th of the base, is micro, and so on. So it makes sense to use M as the symbol for milli. Micro also starts with an M, though, which is why we don't use an M for micro. What is this symbol? It's actually also an M, but it's a Greek M, a mu, spelled M-U. It's not a U. This U in the word mu is a U. But don't use U to mean micro. This is a U. This is a mu. It has this tail in the front, to the extent that tail in the front makes sense. And when I say don't use it, I mean not only in handwriting. Don't type U in Word to mean micro. You can get Word to type a mu. You just have to use symbol. Well, the overall range here is ridiculously huge. From the smallest one, which is 10 to the negative 24th, tiny, tiny, all the way up to 10 to the positive 24th. That's as big a range as anyone needs. Whether you're working with galaxies or subatomic particles or anything in between, there is a unit that is appropriate for your use, right? You could measure something in any units, but it's just a pain in the ass to use an inappropriately sized unit for the job. That's why we use these prefixes. Okay? Well, this range is way more than biology itself needs, which is why you don't have to know all of these. The next page, though, is almost the same table. The red ones were on that last table, but they're either too big or too small to worry about in biology, so you don't have to learn those. The white ones were in the previous table, and you do have to know those. The yellow ones weren't even in the previous table. That previous table had every step jump by 3 orders of magnitude. But just on either side of the base, not when you get away from the base, but just either right above or right below the base, we've added a couple more choices of units just to make it even more convenient. And those differ just by from the base by just 1 order of magnitude at a time. So deca with a K means 10 of. There are 10 meters in a decameter. Right? Deci with a C means 1/10. So there are 10 decimeters in a meter because each one is only 1/10 of a meter. Hecto means 100 of. Centi means 1/100 of, which is why pennies are cents. There's 1/100 of a dollar. Okay, so the white and the red, I mean the white and the yellow, you have to know. Like I said, you have access to this, or you will when I post the link today. Actually, you already have it online, but I'm going to post it more conveniently. Once you memorize the prefixes and the corresponding symbols and what they mean based on the base, don't try to memorize what they mean to each other. Just memorize what centi means compared to the base, what mega means compared to the base. And then you'll be set to start using the metric system. Which brings me to the next major topic. And that is dimensional analysis. Dimensional analysis, first of all, gets its name because dimension is another name for unit. Not all measurements have units, actually. There are such things as dimensionless quantities. For instance, miles per mile. There are no units to that, right? Because the miles cancel out when you divide mile by mile. That's a dimensionless quantity. But most measurements have quantities. I mean, have units. Dimensional analysis is something that students do their best to avoid using correctly. But I want you to use it correctly. And so I'm going to demonstrate how to do it. It's used for a lot more than what I'm going to talk about here. But one reason dimensional analysis is used is for conversion problems. And I'm not exactly sure why so many students hate it, but one reason probably is that you don't have to enter units into a calculator, or in fact you can't. And students want to just punch numbers into a calculator and get an answer. So they do seemingly anything they can think of to avoid writing units. And that can easily get you a wrong answer. Well, first of all, it's going to get you the wrong answer on a quiz that demands you do dimensional analysis, because omitting the units means you're not doing it properly, even if you get the right numerical answer. So pay attention to how we're going to do this and then practice it. Notice this sample problem asks how many millimeters are in 150 miles. Typical conversion problem. What is the quantity here? What? What is the quantity? You just told me that you had a good feel for what quantities and units are. 150? That's a magnitude. That's not a quantity or a unit.
Distance,
yes, that's the quantity. Okay, and we're going to convert it from what it is being measured in right now, which is 150 miles, into the same distance expressed in millimeters. That's what the question's asking for. Well, dimensional analysis for a conversion problem really is just serial multiplication, meaning many things multiplied one after the other. Like you see here, these are all being multiplied, right? And speaking of that, in math, what do we call things that get multiplied together? The product is the answer. What are the things being multiplied? Like the things being added are called addends. And when you do the addition, you come up with a sum. That's the answer. The product is the answer when you multiply together what? Not necessarily variables. 3 times 3 is a multiplication of constants. Yeah. No, they're factors. Each of these things in parentheses is by itself a factor because they're being multiplied. That's why when you factor something in math, you're changing it from a sum like x squared minus 4. That's a difference, which is kind of a sum, to something times something. You're making them factors rather than addends. Anyway, that's what I meant by serial multiplication. You're just a bunch of factors multiplied together. All of these factors, except this first one, are more specifically conversion factors. Now, I want you to think about what you're doing here. You have a distance, right? That's the quantity. It is a specific distance. And that's not changing. You recognize that, right? When you do a conversion, you're not changing the distance. The distance has to be the same in the answer as it was originally. You're just re-expressing it in different units. But you're taking that original distance and you're multiplying it by a bunch of things to get the answer. Well, mathematically, what is the only thing you can multiply something by and not change its value? One, the multiplicative identity. So conversion factors are really just a different representation of one. You can use the numeral one to represent one, but there are infinitely many other ways to represent one, right? Specifically as fractions. Infinitely many fractions represent one. What has to be true of a fraction for it to equal one? Exactly. The numerator has to equal the denominator. So you can write it as 1 over 1, 77 over 77, or any other constant over the same constant, other than 0. And it equals 1, right? The numerator equaling the denominator makes it 1. Well, that's what a conversion factor is. It's a fraction in which the numerator equals the denominator. And therefore, each of these equals 1, and that's why you don't change the distance. You multiply it by 1 over and over. All you're doing in that process is changing the units. You can use as many or as few conversion factors as you want to get to the answer, as long as there are appropriate conversion factors. If you happen to have memorized a conversion factor that converts between miles and millimeters, you could do this in one step. But not many people memorize that one. So that's why this example is done in several different steps. Now, this is not only a conversion problem, it also happens to be converting between metric and silly, or going from silly to metric in this case. Right, you're starting with 150. And so that's a special case I'll talk about in a second. But anyway, the process for all of these conversion factors using dimensional analysis is really the same. You always start with what you're given, which in this case is 150 miles. Now notice that it's 150 point. If that decimal point were not there, it would be a problem with respect to significant figures because of that trailing zero. I'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, 150 miles is what you're given, and that's what you should always start with. Now, you can write it as 150 miles, which is MI, not M. M is meters. But since all the conversion factors are fractions, I'm just going to make it into a fraction, so they're all fractions. You can make it into a fraction just by putting it over 1, obviously, right? Okay, now the problem at the moment is that the current units are miles. That can't be in the answer. The answer has to be nothing but millimeters. That's why you know you're not done, because you're in miles. So it's almost an unthinking process. Just make an empty fraction next. Don't worry about any numbers. And also, don't worry about any other units right away. Think about what the problem is. The problem is you have miles in your current answer. It needs to be taken out, right? In other words, you need to cancel the miles. And you do that by putting them either up or down, the opposite of where they are at the moment. Right now, they're upstairs. So this next one is going to have miles down here. That's what you put in first, without thinking about anything else. Now, you can choose any other unit to put on the top of this fraction, as long as you know the conversion between upstairs and downstairs. And that's why I was saying you could go immediately to millimeters if you knew the conversion factor. But in this example, I'm using the fact that in the Silly system, there are 1,760 yards in 1 mile. You might have memorized 5,280 feet per mile. You could use that as well. All right? Okay, this brings up something also important. Any given conversion factor, remember, equals 1. But there are two units, upstairs and downstairs. And they're different sizes. If you have a hole that you're measuring and you use small units to measure it in, make sense of this in your mind, you're going to have to use more of those small units to make up that hole, right? If you use larger units, you're not going to be using as many of them. This is like the old pizza joke you've probably heard, where the owner of the pizzeria asked the guy whether he wants his pizza cut into 8 slices or 6. And the guy says, 8, because I'm particularly hungry. Well, it's the same amount of pizza, right? There's one hole. But if you use units of eighths, you're going to get more of them. My point here is that in any given conversion factor, whichever the smaller unit is, top or bottom, it's going to have the bigger number associated with it. Because the upstairs equals the downstairs, which is why it equals 1. That's the same hole, in other words. So 1760 yards in 1 mile, miles much bigger than a yard. If you stopped there, only the miles will have canceled. And your answer would be in yards. That's why you know you're not done. And by the way, if you don't bother, which is what students try to do, putting these units down, then you could easily flip this and put 1 divided by 1760, which would get you a nonsense answer. It not only would be wrong because you're not doing it properly with respect to writing down units, but it would be numerically wrong. This, the whole reason you do this is to demonstrate to yourself that you're setting it up properly. So we're not done yet. We just have to continue the process. Once again, make an empty fraction. Now we need to get rid of yards. We can go from yards to anything. This example uses the familiar 3 feet per yard. Right, a yardstick is 3 feet long. That cancels the yards, puts us into feet. We're still not done. Feet get canceled, and this time going to inches. Once again, the smaller unit gets the bigger number. There's 12 inches in 1 foot. Now, this was important, getting to inches, because this is a distance metric to silly conversion, or silly to metric conversion. And there is, you don't have to memorize all conversion factors, but there is one that is worth memorizing, and that's a distance one, which is this next one I'm going to use. It involves inches and centimeters. That's why we wanted to get to inches, so that we could use the fact that there are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. What I mean by exactly is that it's not 2.54 rounded. You can express it as 2.54 as 2.54000 million zeros. It's exact. Just like 3 feet in a yard is also exact. This does not have one significant figure, this 3. It has infinite, because it's an exact value. It's not a measurement. It's a definition. All right? A lot of conversion factors, though, like, for instance, approximately 1.6 kilometers per mile, that's rounding it. So you can't use that with infinite significant figures. But 2.54 centimeters per inch, that's exact. All right? Now we have eliminated the silly system and we're in the metric system currently at centimeters, but we're not done still because we need to get to millimeters. And if you're not yet well practiced with the metric system, then I suggest you don't try going immediately from centimeters to millimeters, which is an easy thing to do. That's the utility of the metric system, but only when you're well practiced. Instead, once you're in the metric system, I want you to temporarily go from where you are to the base. So we're at centimeters, therefore we need to make a new fraction with centimeters canceling. The base is just meters, right? The reason that's important to do is because then all you need to do is remember your definition of centi, which is based on the base, not on any other prefix. Centi means 1/100th of, right? So it's the smaller unit. It takes 100 of those centimeters to equal 1 meter. If we were to stop there, we would be in meters, so we're not done yet. Now the final one is to go from the base that you temporarily stopped at to where you have to be based on the question, which is millimeters. That relies only on your knowledge of what milli means, which is 1/1000th of. So it takes 1,000 of those to equal 1 meter. And going through with all this writing of units shows you that you've set this up properly if every unit except whatever units are supposed to be in the answer are canceled. Go ahead. No, what you put downstairs or upstairs based only depends on what you need to cancel. I put meters down here because we needed to cancel them from here so that meters aren't in the answer. So don't think about it as being one is always in the bottom. One always goes, I mean, it's not even always one, first of all, but you put the numbers based on the relationship between the units and the conversion factor. Okay? That's the setup. That's not the answer. But it shows you that you've set it up properly because the only units remaining are millimeters, and that's the only units that we should have in our answer. The next step is to actually go through with the computation. And you can get a wrong answer here simply by incorrectly using a calculator. And so let me tell you how to properly use a calculator, in case you don't already know. We're dealing here, in this example, with only multiplication and division. That's it, right? Multiplication and division are equal in the hierarchy of mathematical operations, which means you can do them in any order, and you'll get the same answer. As long as you are always hitting times for a numerator and divided by for a denominator. A common mistake is to keep hitting equals. Don't do that. You'll run into problems. You only need to hit equals one time. But the fact that you can do this in any order means you could, you wouldn't do this in practice, but you could enter this as 12 divided by 1 times 1,000 divided by 100 divided by 1 times 1760 and so on. So you've used them all. And then hit equals once. But it's obviously makes much more sense to just work left to right and top to bottom. And you don't have to bother entering any ones because times 1 doesn't change it, divided by 1 doesn't change it. So what you should do is, in the calculator, is 150, and a few of you should do this because I don't have what the answer is. Oh yeah, I do for this. 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100 equals, only one time you hit equals at the end. And this is what the calculator would spit out, right? 241,401,600. Well, a couple important things here. One is that if you just write that number, that's wrong. for two reasons. One is that it's not a distance. It's simply a magnitude. Without any units, you have no idea what that distance is, right? So don't write the number, which is the only thing the calculator tells you. Even if you write the units, though, which I did here with millimeters, it's still wrong because you are not scientifically justified in using this many significant figures. Your answer can't have more significant figures in it than the weakest link with respect to significant figures working toward that. And this is where this dot becomes important after the 150. So for magnitudes that don't have any zeros in them, it's no problem figuring out how many significant figures there are, just how many numerals there are, right? 123 has three significant figures. There aren't any zeros in that. And if all of the zeros are between non-zeros, it's also not a problem. 104 has three significant figures. It's only when you have trailing zeros that it becomes ambiguous. And so 150, these are all examples of standard notation. 150 written as 150, that's a problem scientifically. You know how big 150 is, and the calculator only doesn't care about significant figures. It knows values. But how many significant figures does it have? You cannot tell from this version of this format of representing 150. This is standard notation because of this trailing zero. A trailing zero might be significant, might not be. You know certainly that there are at least two significant figures here. The one and five are both significant. But it has either two or three, depending whether the zero is also significant. Okay, now, this brings up the difference between standard notation, which these are examples of, and scientific notation. Scientific notation is writing something as some number times 10 to some power, which I'm sure you've seen this. There's two major reasons why scientific notation was invented, but they're drastically different in importance. One of the two reasons is just convenience. If you use standard notation, then it becomes a pain in the ass to write really small numbers or really big numbers. Right, 10 to the negative fourth in standard notation, you have to write that as 0.23 zeros and then 1. A pain in the ass to do. And similarly for a huge number where you're going to have a bunch of trailing zeros. So that's one reason why it was invented. Instead of writing 10 to the 23rd in standard notation, you write it as 1 times 10 to the 23rd power. Scientific notation uses a number times 10 raised to a power. That's just a convenience reason. The more important reason why scientific notation was invented is that it completely eliminates ambiguity with respect to significant figures. All you have to do is look at the number that comes before the times 10. However many digits there are in that number, whether they're zero or not, they're significant. So for instance, 150 in standard notation would be written in scientific notation. If there were two, if the zero is not significant, we would write that as 1.5 times 10 to the second. Right? Because 1.5, you have to move it twice to get it here. But if it actually the zero is significant, which we don't know from this notation, we would write that as 1.50 times 10 squared. This number has two significant figures. This has three, and you can tell that clearly in scientific notation, whereas you can't tell it at all in standard. That's the real reason why scientific notation is used. All right. So back to this fact that we can't use more significant figures than we started with. Well, all of these conversion numbers since I use this special one between centimeters and inches, and all these ones are definitions, these are all exact. So they have as many significant figures as you want. They don't limit you at all. Therefore, in this example, the only thing limiting is what you started with, which is the 150. And since it has the decimal place, that means that zero is significant. And therefore, it has exactly three significant figures. And that's all your answer can have into it, even though this is what the calculator spits out. So after this third digit, this next one isn't significant, and therefore you have to round to this place that occupied by the one. You look at the four, it's not five or greater, so you don't make it more than one. And you just make all the rest of these zeros. But then, since those are trailing zeros, that would be ambiguous, so you convert the whole thing into scientific notation using three significant figures. 2.41 has three digits, therefore three significant figures, times 10 to the 8, because getting from here to there is 8 steps. Is that clear? I mean, is it truly clear? Well, rounding is just rounding. What do you mean with respect to significant figures? You just round. Yeah, you round up if the next digit is 5 or greater, and you don't round at all if it's lower than 5. But then, you know, after the rounding, everything else after that becomes zeros. And then you express it in scientific notation so that those trailing zeros aren't ambiguous. Right, they become insignificant. You can't call it 2.41, though, because 2.41 is drastically different from 2.14 times 10 to the 8th. Okay? So this is the magnitude, the correct magnitude, after you've rounded it to the correct number of significant figures, and you have to have the units for it to be correct. You're almost done with that. There is one final step, though, that a lot of people skip, which is just to ask yourself whether this makes sense. You can easily just say, oh, well, the calculator said this, I must be correct. But ask yourself whether it makes sense. In this case, we're going from 150 miles, which you have a feel for how big that is, right, in distance, to millimeters. Well, millimeters are this big. So you'd expect there to be a shitload of them in 150 miles, right? You should expect your number to be big. It is. It's times 10 to the 8th power. It's 241 million, right? If this were 10 to the negative 8th, that doesn't pass the test. And that can happen if you don't set it up properly. So bother asking yourself whether it does make sense. Now I'm going to do one more of these just to solidify it in your mind. Also, using distance and also using a conversion between the two systems. Let's go from metric to silly this time. If I say, for instance, 231 gigameters equals how many feet? That's the problem. So what is the very first step? To write down what's given, right? Which is what? 231 gigameters, not 231. You have to write down the units. So I'm going to express that as a fraction. So put it over 1, right? Gigameters can't be in the answer, so I make an empty fraction with gigameters in the opposite place to cancel it. I can go from gigameters to anything I want, but remember what I said about the metric system. Until you're used to it, go from where you are at the moment to the base first. That would be meters, right? Then you can rely on your knowledge of what giga means. You might not have that memorized yet, but you'll have to by next week. Kilo is three orders of magnitude. Meg is six. Giga is nine. 10^9 is a billion. So one gigameter is a billion meters. Now you can write that as one followed by nine zeros, but I'm going to write it as 10^9 meters in one gigameter. As usual, the smaller unit gets the bigger number. Then once we're at the base, we go from there to where we need to be in the metric system. Where do we need to be in the metric system to get to the silly system? Centimeters, exactly. To use that 2.541, that 541. So meters to centimeters. Well, centimeters are the smaller unit. There's 100 of them in 1 meter. Now that we're at centimeters, we can make the jump to the silly system from centimeters to inches. The 2.54 always goes with the centimeters, not whether it's top or bottom. In this example, the centimeters are on the bottom, but it's always 2.54 centimeters, 2.54 in 1 inch. Okay, now we're in the silly system, but we're in inches, so we just need to go from inches to where we need to be, and this is a case that probably you have memorized. You can go in one step, right, from inches to feet. You don't have to bother doing anything else, using the fact that there are 12 inches in 1 foot. Everything cancels except what needs to be in the answer, which is feet. So, since I just made this up, I need three of you or more to put this in so that we can... If everyone gets a different answer, then something's wrong. But do this as 231 times 10^9, which you can enter as 10E9, times 100 divided by 2.54 divided by 12 equals. Do you have it?
I don't have it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were done. This is the boring part of the lecture recording when you listen to this later. You have it? What is your number? Well, wait a minute. First of all, how many significant figures do we have here? Three, because the only thing constraining us is this. And that's because this is exact, and all the others are definitions. So, yeah, round it to three, first of all. What is that?
7.58
times 10 to the what? 11th power. That's the magnitude. It's not the answer. By the way, did anyone else get this same number? Okay, so it's probably right then. Not that I don't trust you. And the units are feet. Now, does that pass the final test, which is, does it make sense? This is a huge number of feet, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because one gigameter is a billion meters, and we have 231 billion meters. So it should be, yes, a huge number of feet, and it is. All right, now, do you think you can do this? That's what everyone always says. But I think a lot of people skip the necessary step of practicing before you actually are quizzed on it. So I understand that people want to get out of here. You're sick of listening to me. But the fact that this is the last page of this does not mean we're done. I still have three things to talk about, but they don't take long. There's three definitions, which are accuracy, precision, and resolution. Anyone know what accuracy is?
How close you are to the right answer.
That's right. Accuracy is closeness to the truth. Any given measurement, right, there is a real value that is true, whatever it is. textbooks will often use, by analogy, throwing a dart at a dartboard to represent the taking of a measurement, whatever the measurement is. That's a good analogy, really. Each individual dart thrown is one measurement. And the truth, the real value that you're trying to actually come up with, is the bullseye. But obviously when you throw a dart, you don't always hit the bullseye. When you take real measurements, you don't get the absolute truth. But the closeness of the dart to the bullseye represents the degree of accuracy for that single measurement. What about precision, which a lot of times I see on commercials, for instance, precision being incorrectly used when what they really meant was accuracy. Right, a grouping is important here. It makes sense to talk about accuracy of a single measurement, but precision is all about repeatability. And so it doesn't make sense to talk about precision unless you're talking about multiple measurements that have been made. And the dartboard analogy holds up well here, too, because you can throw more than one dart, right? And you usually do if you're playing darts. If you throw three darts, you have a grouping, so-called grouping, right? Well, if you have a tight grouping, if they've landed very close to each other, meaning you've gotten about the same value for all three measurements, then that's high precision. But importantly, notice that it does not have to be at the same time accurate. You can have a very tight grouping way off on the wall. You don't even hit the board. Very low accuracy, but very high precision in that case. But if you have a high precision instrument that is low accuracy, you can keep making the same measurement. You're going to get the same answer, but it's going to be wrong in every case. Obviously, you strive for high accuracy and high precision. Interestingly, though, you can also have low precision and, by coincidence, high accuracy, just by chance, in a sense. Imagine throwing three darts, none of them hits the board, but they form a triangle, and the average of those, which you would take the average of three measurements, the average, which geometrically would be the center of the triangle, if that's right on the bullseye, then even though none of the individual measurements was close to accurate, the average would be accurate with low precision. You see what I'm saying there? Okay, so that's the difference between those two. And then what about resolution? Anyone know what this is? Well, resolution, linguistically, is the noun form of the verb resolve. To resolve. To resolve is another word for to discriminate. What does it mean to discriminate, though? To discriminate means to tell apart. Right? When we discriminate based on sex, for instance, we're noticing that this person is a male or a female rather than being blind to it. Well, in science, discrimination refers to telling apart things that are truly different rather than confusing them for being the same. And an example of this would be if I were to make two marks on the wall. If I stand close enough to those two marks, my eyes and brain are able to resolve them, meaning able to notice them as two distinct marks. But if I stand farther and farther back, eventually there will be a distance at which my maximum resolution is not enough for the situation. And it will look like one mark to my eyes, even though it is really two. I fail to resolve them, in other words. Well, in measurements, resolution really refers to how many significant figures you have. 1.5 times 10 squared, that version of 150, has only 1/10 of the resolution than 1.50 times 10 squared. A calculator can't tell the difference, but they have different resolutions. If for a practical example, once again using a bathroom scale, If I tell you to hop on the scale and tell me your weight, you'll give me whatever number, right? But then if I say, now stay on the scale, I'm going to hand you this postage stamp, and I want you to give me the combined weight of you and the stamp. Bathroom scale is not going to have a high enough precision, a high enough resolution to do that, right? You're going to say, well, it's the same number. It's unable to resolve those two different values, even though they are different. But if you hop on a very, very high resolution scale, it will notice the difference between you and you plus the stamp. That's the difference. A high resolution balance in a scientific lab will get you many more decimal places than a low resolution one. And just in video, when we use the resolution in video, it refers to how small the dots are, right? When American broadcasters don't want to show nudity and they pixelate the nude part, what they're doing is just reducing the resolution so you can't tell what's there. All right, is everyone satisfied for today? Well, not for today, just for the lab. I still have to give you a couple more sermons upstairs. But practice this stuff before next meeting, and I'll talk to you a little bit later.